Now, some of these things I will say probably sound bizarre, but in my books, I don't just say these happen. I give you the facts as stated to me by insiders, people who are part of these operations, and then, of course, a lot of government documentation. And so that takes you to the point where you realize, hey, this did happen. Now, why don't you know about these things? First of all, this is a serious situation, is from the mid-1960s, when I was a government air safety investigator and there was one crash after the other in my area of responsibility, I'm contacting members of Congress, giving them inside information. They had a responsibility to act on this. And the same when I'm finding out about CIA drug smuggling, October Surprise, and some of these other scandals. And never once would they do anything. They could have turned it over to the government accountability office, and that's the investigative arm in Congress. But what they did, those who did answer would say, well, it's not in our area of responsibility. Well, they'll tell that to the people jumping out of the World Trade Center. They may feel a little different about it. But it's not just Congress. It's the media also. And there's been many books written by people who describe in great detail about how media people are, many media people receive secret payments from the CIA and other government agencies.
Tell us about that area. We're interested, you know, because this is alternative media, Rodney, that, of course, exposes all this. Tell us how they get, when did they start and how start infiltrating the media? Because the CIA, of course, started out in 1947 after the Second World War. Is that correct, Rodney?
Right, and that's when the dirty work started, right after that. And my CIA sources started, I would say, about the mid-50s, the ones, and they were especially active during the Reagan-Bush administration. This is when we had the Iran-Contra affair. This is when we had the October Surprise in 1979, 1980, when we had, it seemed to me, even though I thought I was a Republican once, but I don't admit it anymore, but it seemed to me most of these overseas really corrupt activities like October Surprise, illegal funding of Iraq, during the 1980s, the Iran-Contra affair all happened under a Republican president. Anyhow, I left the party some time ago. I think it was either last year or the year before that the newspapers reported a number of instances where other government agencies were secretly paying media people to slant the news the way they wanted. So this has been going on for a long time. But this is why the public doesn't know. And based upon the blatant lies that these political pundits are making, they must figure the public is pretty ignorant or uninformed. So, and I can understand where the public, they got a job, they got a limited amount of time to spend on all this, so they got to listen to TV, and so they get this stuff, and the lies. So like, for instance, all the lies that, got us into, Iraq, this was known before anybody that had internet access could have seen that every one of the statements made by Bush and his group were outright lies. The UN inspection team knew that, and all the foreign sources that were aware knew about this. But the American public doesn't know. And this is why, and people just aren't reading enough anymore. And this is why I've tried to come out with these books. Again, very factual. They've had a lot of good reports. I even made some of them free on my internet site at Defrauding America, figuring, well, if they won't pay, maybe they'll at least read it. But I am not sure. There's been over 300,000 downloads in the last year or so, but whether they're doing anything, that's something else again.
Got it. Got it. So, but Roddy, I'd like you to go back and tell us about some of the different chapters of your long experience of exposing government and corruption and go over them in more detail as to how it happened. I think if people understand the mechanics and the step-by-steps of how these things happened, I think they get a better appreciation of what you're saying and how it can affect them. So let's go back, for example, to you exposing corruption in FAA yourself. You tell us, how was it that you came across these criminal misconduct? What was it that led you to find, to believe that what happened with the crashes was because of FAA's criminal misconduct? And then what happened when he actually further investigated it and reported it? Could you elaborate on the first time, for example, you came across this criminal misconduct in FAA back in the early 70s?
Yes, and I can also briefly go over some of the books to give you a general idea what they cover. But now, to address what you mentioned, the problems in the FAA, here's overall the problems that the inspectors that know what they're doing, and that's only a small percentage of them, because there's very few inspectors that have the airline experience. Most of them don't have much experience, and they don't want to rock the boat because that's a good way to lose your job. So you've got to be both informed, have a good background, and be stupid enough to know you're going to pay the price if you speak out and try to do the job. But here's what I ran into. Now, in one particular airline, it was especially bad. Now, many airlines try to do a fairly good job, but where they don't do a good job, and at one airline it was criminal, but where they don't, what happens is that when inspectors report serious safety problems, where FAA management then has to take corrective action, they block it. Just like, for instance, let's say hijackings. We knew for years how easy it was to prevent hijackings. And hijackings have been going on all over the world for the last 50 years. And, of course, prior to 9/11, the evidence that planes are going to be hijacked were well known to the U.S. government. But anyhow, what happens is you make a report, and what FAA management says, look, don't make the reports because it makes us look bad when there's a crash. Makes them look bad also.
How does it make them look bad if they're doing their job to find out what's been going wrong and correct it? What's bad about that?
Well, what makes it look bad is because they don't do anything.
But now they're doing something. You're reporting it.
They
find out what's wrong, they're going to do something about it. How would that make them look bad?
The thing is, they don't do it. There's various reasons why they don't do it. Part of the reasons is they're very protective of certain. Some of the airlines have powerful influences over the FAA. They're heavy contributors to the members of Congress, and then they complain to Congress maybe that way, and then it comes back to us, or they go directly to our supervisors. And I've had inspectors say, they left an airline, and before they get back to the office, the airline has already contacted their bosses, and the bosses are waiting for them. But let me give you an example of how people are cremated alive as a result of this. There was a crash at Salt Lake City. This was United Airlines. some years ago, and that was in my area of responsibility. Well, the crash and the deaths were caused by three things, and these three immediate things were reported by the outfit, the National Transportation Safety Board, that's responsible for determining the official cause of the crash. So what they reported was, one, the captain's high sink rate. That's a very dangerous approach. Two, and the
high rate, sink rate? What is that rate? I don't understand that.
What that means is, here you're coming in. I see we're having a break, so I'll save it.
No problem. I'll save it, because when we come back, we got to understand these things, because, folks, this all leads to more. I'm going to give you a step-by-step breakdown of how these things came up with Ronnie Stitch on We the People Radio Network. We're back with the whistleblower, government whistleblower, Rodney Stitch, a great American hero, telling us incredible stories, folks, that if did not come from the mouth of a man who is well-known, who is very well written. He's written many books on this subject. Everything he says is backed up. You would think it's just not real. You would think this cannot happen in America. This is not America. This is the kind of stuff you would think that happens in maybe Nazi Germany, maybe the former Soviet Union. But no, folks. The kind of stuff you're hearing happening is happening right here in the United States of America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, the place where we are told we have a government by, of, and for the people, government of the people, by the people, for the people. What we're hearing instead, folks, the truth is, the sad truth is, in America today, in 2007, we have the government of the big banks and corporations by the people of the big banks and corporations and their puppets and stooges for the benefit of the big banks and corporations that own the politicians, the government, and the major media, and the directly and indirectly control the entire government, including the Department, the U.S. Department of Injustice and the courts. So, Rodney, would you please pick up where you left off before the break, please?
Right. Okay. We were talking about, we were giving an example of how the actions, the obstruction, the standard obstruction actions by FAA management has resulted in crashes and people dying. Now, the example I'm giving you, which is only one of many in my Unfriendly Skies book, was a crash at Salt Lake City. And as I mentioned, the National Transportation Safety Board reported the three direct causes of the crash and the deaths. And this was the pilot's dangerous high sink rate. And what a high sink rate is, the plane is with the jets. This is very dangerous. As the plane is approaching the runway, it's descending too fast. And the pilot now expects to flare out. Well, when you're descending too fast in a jet, the plane doesn't respond to the pilot's desire to flare it, unless you have a lot of excess airspeed. So you hit the ground hard. If you hit it before, and there's a seawall or something, you disintegrate. But otherwise, you come apart in different ways. Okay, that was the first problem. Second problem, the failure of the flight engineer to shut off the fuel pumps and the fuel valves after they hit hard and the landing gear ripped off and they slid down the runway for half a mile. The third problem they identified was the poor evacuation of the passengers by the crew members. And that resulted, the crash was really a survivable crash. And by that I mean everyone was alive when the plane came to a stop. but that wasn't the case because I believe it was 42 people were cremated alive. So here's the facts. Here's the truth. Here's what the NTSB left out. One, I had reported that very same captain, his name was Kaymeyer, I had reported he had a dangerous high sink rate when I was doing an en route check from Chicago, Omaha to Denver. So I reported it. I said he should have corrective training, which is no disgrace. Well, the FAA did not require that, and the airline, that airline would never do it. That's another story in itself. So then the second problem, the flight engineer problem, I had repeatedly reported, and I remember one report was a five-page, single-spaced report going into details about the totally unsatisfactory training provided by United Airlines and the competency checks of the flight engineer. And one of the memorandums I got back was saying I had a personality problem. That's standard in the FAA. And then the last thing, the poor evacuation of the passengers, I made two reports prior to the crash saying the airline was falsifying the records. The crew members were not being given the yearly required emergency evacuation training. They were only doing it every 3 years and only in part. And now this is what the NTSB covered up. So anyhow, when they cover up, everything is going on the same as before. And, of course, we had more crashes and more deaths. And it's this type of attitude that, and this is only one example I'm giving you. I give many other examples in unfriendly skies. But this is a culture whereby the known preventative measures to prevent airliners from being hijacked were blocked. I even made a report on that, but you cannot get them to do a damn thing. One of the reasons is there's incompetent people there in management, and they don't want to have a confrontation with the airlines. Two, there's pressure on the airlines to from the airlines on the FAA, and there are people that are looking to on the revolving door. There are people in management who want to go with the company and get a high-paying job. So the people pay for it. Now, the world's worst air disaster, when I joined the FAA, was a United Airlines plane that crashed into Brooklyn. That was, and that's number one in my book. But anyhow, I go into the errors made by the captain, and I go into the falsified training records whereby the airline was not performing the legally required and industry-accepted training and competency checks of the airline pilots and simply falsifying the records. That was covered up. So this is was the start of my education on government corruption. And then thereafter, I go into many other areas. And when you're ready, I'd like to briefly go into some of the books and give you what I bring out. Like, for instance, Defrauding America. That will be quite a list.
Well, let's continue on this subject of the airlines right now. You mentioned the crashes happened from, I guess, early 70s until 1985. But I guess 1985, they have not happened as much. Why do you think that is? I mean, they covered up so much of the crimes. What do you think changed that the airline crashes have not been the last 20 years as common as they were the 20 years before that?
Okay, things did change. Though we have had some major crashes that did occur, though they don't occur as often like we had with the DC-10s and all. But to answer your question, the reason we don't have as many crashes now, first of all, the jet aircraft extremely, the newer ones are extremely reliable. You don't have the engine failures. You don't have the system failures. Like in the early jets, and of course in the Pistons, then we had all types of problems. But in the early jets, we had hydraulic failures and reversing system failures, electrical failures. Like, for instance, there was a United 727 that took off from Los Angeles International Airport. Whoops, I see we have a break. I'll hold it.
Yeah, hold that thought, Rodney, and that's right, because that's, you know, give people a better idea of, you know, why things that we did not expect them to change because the criminality is still there. How come the accident went down anyhow? So hang on, folks. We'll be right back on Freedom Lawson's program with Rodney Stitch Whistleblower. We're back, folks, with a great American patriot, a whistleblower exposing and putting light on government corruption and criminality, a man we all owe a great deal of gratitude because, folks, you don't know because of his activities, even though they did not directly produce results for us, how indirectly he brought so much attention on these things, and eventually they fixed those problems much later, perhaps. Some of them they haven't, but some things they have done. So, Rodney, before the break, you were telling us about how the airline crashes have gone down over the last couple of decades. Would you continue on that issue, please?
Hey, as I mentioned, well, first of all, in the Piston days, it was a totally different. You had to be really proficient, and you had to really know the systems, and very few of them did. And there were so many engine failures. You were always having an engine failure somewhere, and or system failures. But then the jets came along, and in the initial jets were having, while they were far more reliable than the Pistons and did not take as much attention from the pilots, they still had problems. Like I mentioned, there were engine failures, but the engine failures were nowhere near what they were. But they had hydraulic failures, electrical failures. Then we have pilots flying into the ground. Now we have radar. There's virtually nowhere in the United States where you don't where someone on the ground isn't watching you on radar, and you have the controllers watching you, and then so there's far less flying into the ground like we had in the earlier days, and. The procedures we have, for instance, equipment that warns the pilots also if they're approaching the ground. We have equipment that lets us know if we are on a collision course with another aircraft. And so all of these things work out to where there's very few abnormalities, and you've got people watching you almost the entire way. Everything's more reliable. But you still have problems. We still have, like we have an Alaskan airline plane go down off the Pacific Ocean there a few years back because of maintenance failures. Well, a friend of mine was a woman principal inspector with the FAA responsible for the maintenance at Alaskan Airlines. And she was reporting the problems with the maintenance, and she was getting the same problems I had, and she resigned. She didn't put up with any more of this. But what happened? A whole plane load of people were killed sometime afterwards due to the same problems she was bringing out. You don't hear these things. And I could mention any number of crashes that have happened. Even though we don't have them every few months, there's still enough crashes that should not have happened. And there's a lot of funerals as a result of it. But as long as we have the cover-ups, and that's a culture in the United States, cover-ups. Now, I was in the Navy when the Japs attacked Pearl Harbor. I could see we're just not with it. Here we have the radar operator sees dozens of planes approaching from the northwest, and they reported to Pearl Harbor, and what happens? Nothing. So we lose a few thousand American GIs, and of course it pretty much crippled us for a while. But that's the same like with 9/11. We have all types of warnings. We have the FAA incompetence. We have the warnings to the CIA and FBI, and you've got the incompetence there. You have the cover-ups. So nothing has changed since the time when I was in the Navy. That's one of the advantages, I guess, living this long. You see a pattern which the younger people don't see, because they don't have the benefit of all this. Well, I try to give you that in these 15 books I have, but you got to read them. And that requires taking that thing out of your ear and reading.
Sure. Well, Ron, let me ask you about Pearl Harbor. You said that because, you know, that was, as you may know, that was a set-up job that they wanted to get the United States into the war. Roosevelt wanted it and then let it happen. But you said that you have some information about how Pearl Harbor was also a cover-up job. What do you know about that Pearl Harbor situation?
Well, the only thing is, or like what I mentioned, is that now the area that you go into, I don't have any data on that. Of course, I've read the same thing you have, but I don't have any information on that. But I mentioned about the incompetence. Also, look, I remember standing at attention while we're being given a speech warning us the Japanese are going to attack. And how are our planes parked? They're all parked in a neat row. So one Japanese plane can wipe out a whole squadron within a matter of 1 minute. So, and we just don't seem to learn. That's our nature.
Well, the thing was, of course, I could tell you about that, Rodney, about Pearl Harbor, is that because the Roosevelt wanted to get U.S. into the war, and we need an excuse for that to happen. We have broken the Japanese code. We kept pressuring the Japanese to get the war going with us because we wanted an excuse to get into war with the Germany. And so the Japanese were pressured and tricked into this situation. And we knew that they were going to attack. We had broken the code, but we let it happen because we knew that the American people had to get upset enough, at the Japanese to go into war. Kind of like what happened on 9/11. That was an inside setup job. The project for New American Century, which Rumsfeld and Cheney, new cons were on it, on the board of that. They said plainly in one of the reports that they needed another event like Pearl Harbor for America to become the new empire, the project for the new American century. This is all on the internet available there. So, but at the time of the Second World War, Pearl Harbor, you were in Pearl Harbor or some other location, Rodney?
I was stationed at Quonset Point, Rhode Island. I was in the PBY squadron. That's a Catalina seaplane. And so when Pearl Harbor occurred, all of the PBYs were destroyed. So we immediately got out there. And then for a while, I was patrolling out of Midway. I remember the one time we're patrolling out of Midway, and a Japanese Betty comes after us. So here we are in a plane that does about 120 knots, and they're doing close to 300 knots. And, of course, our guns are for peacetime because our 50 caliber guns, the ammunition supply is in a little can about the size of something you can carry under your arm. So all you can do is shoot a few bursts, and then you got to ask the Japs, hey, hold it while I reload. This is the position we were in World War II. In the beginning of World War II, as usual, we were unprepared.
Yeah, but that preparation sounded like it was maybe set up on purpose to get us into the war further. Well, tell us about the FFAA misconduct, kind of like the one that you saw yourself when you reported that. Like you said, they don't want to talk about it because the management oftentimes, not only did they get pressure from the congressmen who are pressured by the airlines, but they want to leave the government paid job for a bigger, much bigger paying job with the airline itself. And so they don't want to make the airline unhappy. And, in fact, if they cover up for the airline, that's even more likely that they're going to be rewarded now for a fat job at the airline because, hey, you helped us save us a ton of money so we can afford to pay you one guy a lot more money that you're worth it because you just did the cover-up job for us.
Okay,
so,
let me tell you what I did about it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm making a report. I'm contacting the National Transportation Safety Board. I'm contacting members of Congress. I'm contacting Drew Pearson, who was interested. I even eventually, but anyhow, what I did, I figured, well, I got to do something because people were dying. I mean, I'm not trying to be melodramatic. People were dying in my immediate area of responsibility. So I did, oops, I see a break. I'll get you when it's over.
Yes, yes. Folks, we got just another section to with Rodney State. So if you have any questions, better call him now, 512-646-1984. 512-646-1984 if you have questions from Rodney Stitch. We'll be right back with more of this American Hero Live. Let's get back to Rodney Stitch. But Rodney, could you give our callers your website one more time before we continue on so they know how to get a hold of this information and your books that they're talking about?
Okay. The primary one is defraudingamerica.com. That's defraudingamerica.com. And on there, there'll be a place you can download any of the books at no charge, portions of it. As we were mentioning a little while ago, here I am. I'm as a FAA inspector. People, we have crashes occurring every few months in the program for which I have responsibilities. That included the world's worst air disaster several months before I came on the program. So since I was unable to get anybody to act, I used the law in such a way that I acted similar to an independent prosecutor. So what I did, I conducted a trial before an administrative court judge who was the legal counsel to the FAA administrator. And I'm bringing in witnesses, that's management, and I'm quizzing them. Plus, I'm providing and also obtaining additional documents to show the pattern of the blockage, the repeated blockage by FAA management, the threats against inspectors, the warnings not to make reports, and when they are made, oftentimes they're either destroyed or they disappear. And this is going on while people are dying as a result of it. So anyhow, that went on for several weeks, the hearings. And during the hearings, there were three more crashes due to the exact same problems I was bringing out. And one was that Salt Lake City crash. And I warned that I even have my closing brief on the Internet site. I warned the FAA what's going to happen if you cover up. And, of course, that's all they know how to do. So they covered up. And we had years of additional crashes thereafter. Some of them were extremely brutal crashes. And so that's the way the system works. So from that point on, then I started going into all of these other areas first of all, I figured, well, I'm going to go around all of these blocks. So I published my first book in 1978. I started appearing on radio and television shows.
That was when you were still with FAA, or had you resigned FAA at that time, Rodney?
I left out one thing. After the cover-up, I reported these things to the FBI, to the U.S. Attorney in Denver and Salt Lake Denver and Oklahoma City. I appeared before a federal grand jury in Denver, something that the U.S. attorney was trying to block. And I found out how federal grand juries, they're more or less, they do what the U.S. attorney tells them to do. And so anyhow, I figured, well, enough of this. I'm not going to work under these conditions. So I left the FAA, and I started getting into real estate. That's how I built up my $10 million in assets. But at the same time, I'm staying active and trying to expose these things. And finally, I wrote the book and published the first one in 1978, which had excellent book reviews. And I got on the first of about, there's been over 3,000 radio and television shows since then, trying to wake up the public. But here's what happens. Like, here's an example. I'm in Idaho, a little space in Idaho Falls, Idaho. A woman and her three daughters who were killed in that Salt Lake City crash are buried there. I give the people the information. No interest whatsoever. So that's why, in a way, it's not only the fault of these people. It's the fault of the American people. They just won't do anything.
How about the relatives of the victims? Have you ever been able to contact the relatives of the victims of these crashes for them to take action? And what happened when you did attempt that?
Well, I didn't want to make a direct contact for fear it would be misconstrued. But they knew about me, just like the 9/11, matter of fact. The attorneys for the 9/11 victims all knew about my lawsuit. But I found out in the past, the attorneys will protect the government on these things. When things get real bad, if it's only a little shady, okay, they'll address it. But when you get into the corruption of this type, where there's been such a heavy loss of life, then that's out of bounds.
You mean the attorneys will not take the case, or that they drop the case, or could you be more specific on that? What's been your experience with the attorneys when they were approached to represent these cases?
Oh, I've had several attorneys I even write about in my book where I tell them the problems, thinking, well, they'll publicize it, but they don't. They go behind the scenes and make a deal with the airline, say, hey, you pay or else we'll bring this fellow forward. So the airline pays up, and that's usually United. It was usually United Airlines. So, and just like in that San Diego crash, which was the next world's worst air disaster after the New York City one. I mentioned the data to a couple of the attorneys thinking, well, they're going to go public with it. They keep it private, so they enrich themselves. I remember one attorney from Los Angeles called me. He was going to come to my house. I said, hey, you don't have to get my data. Just tell the airline they'll have me as a witness, and they'll settle. And sure enough, they settled, and he bought himself a new brand-new twin-engine aircraft with the money. That's the way the system works. Incidentally, I have a book called Congress and Other Cesspools. That's the latest one. And it goes into a lot of problems that the American public is facing today. And that includes the subprime loans, how the public was hoodwinked on that, and all types of things that the public should know about today.